This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. As he hosts his administration's first state visit, U.S. President Joe Biden is acknowledging French concerns over his signature climate change law. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Amid the pomp of French President Emmanuel Macron's White House visit, differences over trade shadow the occasion. Macron and other European leaders say incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act favor American-made climate technology. And while he applauds U.S. efforts to fight climate change, the subsidies would hurt European companies.
We want to succeed together, not one against the other.
At a joint news conference, President Biden said he makes no apologies for a law he wrote, but there are glitches.
There's tweaks that we can make.
Macron says the nations will resynchronize their clean energy efforts. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A U.S. appeals court on Thursday reversed a judge's appointment of a special master to vet documents seized by the FBI from former President Donald Trump's Florida home. A three-judge panel of the Atlanta-based 11th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the Justice Department in its challenge to a September ruling by U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon. The 11th Circuit overturned Cannon's decision to grant Trump's request for a special master to evaluate the records to decide if some should be kept from investigators and to bar investigators from accessing most of the records pending the review. The appeals court ordered the dismissal of Trump's lawsuit filed after the August 8th raid of his Florida estate. Trump is likely to appeal the 11th Circuit's action to the conservative majority U.S. Supreme Court. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. The Somali government said Thursday its forces killed about 40 al-Shabaab fighters in the Middle Shabelle region in the latest clashes in a months-long offensive that aims to weaken the grip of the Islamist militant group. Al-Shabaab, an al-Qaeda franchise that's seeking to impose its interpretation of Islamic law across the country, frequently stages deadly attacks in the capital, Mogadishu. On Sunday, al-Shabaab stormed a heavily guarded hotel near the president's home in Mogadishu, killing 9 people. Russian-made helicopters and weapons were used in an airstrike in September that left 12 people in Myanmar dead, half of them children, at a school. This according to a human rights group that monitors violations in Myanmar. Russia, which has diplomatic ties with Myanmar, denies the accusation. The group Myanmar Witness made its allegations in a recent report detailing what it says happened at the school on the compound of a Buddhist monastery in Tabayan Township. The legal team for movie mogul Harvey Weinstein is presenting closing arguments in his rape and sexual assault trial in Los Angeles. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports.
Defense attorney Alan Jackson told a Los Angeles jury that fury from witnesses does not make fact and tears do not make truth. Weinstein is charged with raping and sexually assaulting 2 women and committing sexual battery against 2 others. Jackson says with 2 of the women, the encounters were consensual, and with the other 2, it never happened. Prosecutors said in their closing arguments, it's time for Weinstein's reign of terror to end. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
The U.S. Senate has moved quickly to avert a rail strike that the Biden administration and business leaders say would greatly damage the economy. The Senate passed a bill Thursday to bind rail companies and workers to a proposed settlement that was reached between the rail companies and union leaders in September. That settlement had been rejected by some of the 12 unions involved, creating the possibility of a strike. The Senate vote was 80 to 15. It came one day after the House voted to impose the agreement. The measure now goes to President Biden's desk for his signature. The Biden administration has banned approvals of new telecommunications equipment from China's Huawei Technologies and ZTE because they pose an unacceptable risk to U.S. national security. The move represents Washington's latest crackdown on the Chinese tech giants amid fears that Beijing could use them to spy on Americans. Huawei declined to comment. ZTE and the Chinese embassy in Washington did not respond to requests for comment. I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, December 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the Pentagon expresses concern about China's growing stockpile of nuclear warheads.
A new Pentagon report says China has more than 400 nuclear warheads, nearly doubling its nuclear arsenal in just 2 years.
Mixed reactions over European Union proposal for a tribunal on Russia's aggression in Ukraine.
Russia must pay for its horrific crimes, including for its crime of aggression against a sovereign state.
That was European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen.
And Arabs unite in celebration as Morocco advances in the World Cup. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russian shelling has cut off power in much of the recently liberated Ukrainian city of Kherson, just days after it was restored. Moscow is pressing its drive to destroy Ukraine's energy plants and other key civilian infrastructures as freezing weather sets in. In Kyiv, Mayor Vitaly Klitschko warned the capital's millions of residents on Thursday that they should stock up on water and preserved food to see them through a winter that could be miserable if more energy infrastructure is damaged. The pace of China's accelerating nuclear expansion may enable Beijing to field a stockpile of about 1,500 warheads by 2035. That's according to the Pentagon's annual, quote, China Military Power, unquote, report to Congress. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob has the details.
A new Pentagon report says China has more than 400 nuclear warheads, nearly doubling its nuclear arsenal in just 2 years. It also says Beijing launched roughly 135 ballistic missiles for testing and training last year, more than the rest of the world combined, when you exclude ballistic missiles launched in conflict zones like Ukraine. Bradley Bowman is an analyst with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
If one looks at the capability and capacity of China's missile arsenal, it's breathtaking.
The Pentagon calls China its pacing challenge. Here's General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, responding to a VOA question in his last press briefing.
China is the one country out there that geopolitically has the power potential to be a significant challenge to the United States. And they are.
And according to the report, China has increased what the Pentagon calls unsafe and unprofessional military behavior toward the U.S. and its allies in the region, especially, as defense analyst Bradley Bowman points out, toward the democratic island of Taiwan.
They've refused to take military force against Taiwan off the table, explicitly refused to do so. And they're undertaking the actions of a country that means what they say, and that is they're getting ready to potentially conduct an attack against Taiwan.
A potential attack, the Pentagon says, is not in the near term, despite recent aggressions.
As the report highlights, we don't believe that an invasion is imminent.
But a senior defense official told reporters China has created a new normal around Taiwan in terms of military activity. Immediately after U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan in August, China ramped up drills, missile launches, and strait crossings. Those eventually decreased, but are still routine, the official said, rather than reserved for rare occasions, as was China's practice before the visit. China's defense minister told U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin in Cambodia last week that Beijing considers Taiwan to be a, quote, red line, and that aggression has spilled into areas including the South China Sea, where the USS Chancellorsville completed a freedom of navigation operation to promote free passage through international waters that carry half the world's merchant fleet tonnage, worth trillions of dollars each year.
I know that there has been some reporting that China essentially ejected our ship from the areas. That is not true. Again, we'll continue to sail, fly, and operate wherever international law allows.
China claims much of the sea as its territory and has ignored an international court ruling holding that Beijing has no historic title over the South China Sea. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
A new European Union proposal for an international tribunal to try Russian aggression in Ukraine has received mixed reviews, prompting a thumbs up from Kyiv and rights advocates, but doubts from experts about its feasibility and whether it will have broad-based acceptance. For VOA, Lisa Bryan reports from Paris.
Russia must pay for its horrific crimes, including for its crime of aggression against a sovereign state.
That was European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen Wednesday laying out the arguments for establishing a new United Nations-backed court.
We are ready to start working with the international community to get the broadest international support possible for this specialized court.
There is already the UN-backed International Criminal Court, or ICC, in the Netherlands, which is looking into alleged Russian war crimes and crimes against humanity in Ukraine, as well as possible Ukrainian atrocities. Russia has denied committing war crimes and accused the international community of ignoring abuses by Ukrainian forces. This new body, if it's ever realized, would look specifically at Russian aggression in Ukraine. The Ukrainian government has been quick to support the idea. Visiting a London exhibition this week on alleged Russian war crimes, Ukraine's First Lady, Olena Zelenska, called for justice.
So, hello.
She said more than 40,000 crimes had been registered in Ukraine. Look at the photos at the exhibition, she told her audience, and abstract ideas of war in Ukraine will become real. Moscow has dismissed the idea of a new war crimes tribunal as having no legitimacy. Experts suggest it would be challenging to establish one.
My reading of what Ursula von der Leyen said is that the EU doesn't take it for granted that there would be overwhelming international support, and that it recognizes that there has to be a kind of campaign to win support for the idea.
Anthony Dworkin is a policy fellow specializing in human rights and justice at the European Council on Foreign Relations, a think tank. He said Brussels will especially need backing from developing countries in Africa and elsewhere.
And I think it's very important that that should be done, you know, rather than European countries kind of short-circuiting the attempt to win international legitimacy for the idea by just setting it up themselves.
Even if it's up and running, such a tribunal may face obstacles if, for example, Russian President Vladimir Putin or other Russian officials face war crimes charges, yet are still welcome to visit some countries. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Thank you, Lisa. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres praised Ethiopia's Tigray ceasefire during his first visit to the country since the war broke out 2 years ago. He said the UN is upscaling aid to meet, quote, dramatic humanitarian needs, unquote. Fred Hartau reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Speaking alongside African Union Commissioner Moussa Faki Mahmed on Thursday, Guterres called on the international community to support Ethiopia following the signing of the ceasefire with Tigray last month. Ethiopia's Ministry of Finance says it will cost $20 billion to rebuild damage done to infrastructure during the two-year conflict. But donors, including the United States and the European Union, are yet to resume support that was cut off out of concern for human rights abuses.
We appeal to the international community to support Ethiopia in its development. There is not a better way to consolidate peace than developing the country, creating the conditions for the people to see the peace dividends, people to see how peace contributes to improvement of the living conditions of the citizens of the country. And we'll be in the first line of advocating for international support for the development of Ethiopia in this crucial moment of the history of the country.
While in Addis Ababa, Guterres held a joint meeting with the AU's Faki and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Guterres said that the conflict in Ethiopia had resulted in more casualties than the war in Ukraine, and added that implementation of the ceasefire was vital.
This is an opportunity that Ethiopia cannot miss, that Africa cannot miss, and that the world cannot miss. There were more casualties in the conflict in Ethiopia than in the conflict in Ukraine. People sometimes forget that this has been a dramatic conflict, and what was achieved thanks to the mediation of the African Union is remarkable, and it's the obligation of everybody everywhere in the world to do everything possible to support the African Union and to support the parties to make sure that we reach a final peace settlement.
Under the terms of an implementation accord, the AU was due to deploy deploy a monitoring team to Tigray by November 22. But diplomatic sources told VOA the team has yet to reach the northern region. The Tigray rebels have agreed to disarm their fighting force alongside the withdrawal of Eritrean and other non-federal forces from Tigray. But diplomats say Eritrean troops are still present. Aid has started to reach the region, where 5.4 million people need humanitarian support. Disarmament was due to be completed within 30 days of the ceasefire that was agreed on November 2. Ethiopia's government said Thursday that a committee tasked with organizing the disarming of Tigray's fighters had convened in the city of Shire, adding that the committee's work had been delayed due to technical factors. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
As the 2022 FIFA World Cup matches play out in Qatar, VOA reports on the families of some of the thousands of migrant workers who died building cup-related facilities over the past decade. They said they would never recover. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from the Shusha, Nepal.
Not long after Qatar was awarded the 2022 World Cup, back in 2010, rights groups and the media began reporting abuses against the rapidly growing population of migrant workers, mostly from South Asia and Africa. In the Dinusha district of Nepal, young men flocked to Qatar, many borrowing large sums to get there for the chance to make some money and build a future. Families left behind say there were no other good options. Before her husband, Muneshwar, went to Qatar, Aslani Devi Yadav says he was paid only 4 kilograms of rice a day for his work in Nepal. He died in Qatar in 2018.
We had small children at that time, so he decided to go for foreign employment to earn money for the food and their schooling.
Muneshwar worked in construction, often carrying heavy loads to the top of skyscrapers under construction. Despite this danger, he died at night, and his family was told it was of heart failure.
His body was brought 15 days after the death. After that, we performed his last rites and rituals at our home.
Amnesty International says most of the death certificates issued to the families of the deceased migrant workers list some kind of heart failure or natural causes of death. Doctors say healthy young men do not die naturally. But this ruling means employers are not legally or financially responsible for the death. And Yadav, like other families left behind, now struggles to survive.
There is no source of income after my husband's death. I sold my land. I am running my home from the money from the land sale.
When that money is gone, Yadav says her children will have to work, because she doesn't make enough money selling milk from her one buffalo to support the family. A 2021 Guardian newspaper investigation revealed that more than 6,500 migrant workers have died in Qatar since the World Cup was awarded. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Dinusha, Nepal.
In other news, Morocco is the Arab world's last hope at the World Cup ever to be held in the Middle East. The fractured region is rallying around a North African nation after its 2-1 win against Canada that advanced Morocco to the knockout stage of the tournament for the first time since 1986. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. A Japanese biotech firm says it has developed the world's first early screening test for pancreatic cancer using the powerful noses of tiny worms. Louisa Nax of Reuters has more.
Japanese biotech firm Hirotsu Bioscience says it has developed the world's first early screening test for the disease. These creatures, known scientifically as C. elegans, belong to a family of nematodes. Their noses are much more powerful than dogs. Hirotsu Bioscience says that makes the tiny animal a potent diagnostic tool, as they can follow their nose toward cancer cells. CEO and founder of Hirotsu Bioscience, Taaki Hirotsu, has been researching the tiny worms for 28 years.
Pancreatic cancer pretty much cannot be detected at an early stage, and there are no tests to detect very early stage pancreatic cancer anywhere in the world. What's very important with early detection of cancer and these kinds of diseases is being able to sense very trace amounts. And when it comes to that, I think that machines don't stand a chance against the capabilities that living organisms have. There are various types of cancer tests using different methods around the world, but none have a method using the capabilities of living organisms.
Hirotsu Bio launched its first N-nose pancreas test directly to consumers in Japan in January 2020. Users send a urine sample to a lab where it is put in a petri dish with the nematodes. The company said the test had the ability to tell if users were at a high risk of cancer or not. About 250,000 people have taken the original test, with about 5-6% getting high-risk readings. In November 2022, Hirotsu Bio launched a new version of the test, tweaking the genetic code of the nematodes so that they swim away from pancreatic cancer samples. The pancreas test kit costs up to 70,000 yen, or about $500. The company hopes to bring the test to the United States by 2023. In the coming years, it expects to roll out targeted tests for liver cancer, as well as cervical and breast cancers. But it isn't without criticism. Some doctors have criticized Hirotsu Bio's direct approach to consumers and doubted the medical usefulness of the results. The company counters that the accuracy of N-nose stands up well against other diagnostic tests and are intended as early screening tools that can guide patients to further testing and treatment sooner.
That's Louisa Nex of Reuters. And trials show a new Alzheimer drug from Eisai and Biogen shows slows cognitive decline, but it may come with some potential serious side effects and at a hefty cost. Lisa Fielder of Reuters reports.
An experimental Alzheimer's drug from Eisai and Biogen was seen to slow cognitive decline in a closely watched trial. It's the first big breakthrough in 30 years of Alzheimer's research, but the detailed data presented also showed a possible risk of serious side effects for certain patients. The drug, lecanemab, was associated with a dangerous type of brain swelling in nearly 13% of patients. The trial spanned 18 months and enrolled nearly 1,800 participants with early-stage Alzheimer's. Some patients also experienced bleeding in the brain, a symptom linked to the deaths of two people receiving the drug in a follow-on study. Eisai said it believes the deaths cannot be attributed to lecanemab. Lecanemab is an antibody designed to remove sticky deposits of a protein called amyloid beta in the brain. Eisai and Biogen reported in September it reduced the rate of cognitive decline by 27% compared to a placebo. It's still early days, scientists say, but the Alzheimer's Association said the data confirms the drug can meaningfully change the course of the disease and called on US regulators to green light accelerated approval. They're slated to decide by January 6. The finding has strengthened support from some scientists for simultaneously targeting another protein linked to Alzheimer's, called tau, alongside amyloid. That provides momentum for clinical trials of cocktail treatments targeting both proteins, similar to those used against cancers and HIV.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
Earlier this year, astronomers from the Zwicky Transient Facility Collaboration at San Diego's Palomar Observatory observed a rare cosmic event. They saw a star being ripped to shreds when it got too close to a supermassive black hole some 8.5 billion light-years away. As the contents of the star were being drawn into the dark abyss, some of its material was trapped and formed an accretion disk, which is a rapidly spinning disk that orbits the black hole. As the black hole was devouring the hapless star, its accretion disk released powerful jets of matter that travel at nearly the speed of light. A large international collaboration of astronomers investigated the phenomenon and released their findings in the journal Nature. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. What should we make of the impending right-wing government in Israel? Benjamin Netanyahu returns to power, this time with an alliance of some of the most extreme politicians in Israel today. Two Israel experts explain why this happened and implications for the Palestinians, U.S.-Israel relations, and the region. Israel's new government, next on Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. in honor of World AIDS Day, we reprise a conversation with AIDS activist, journalist, and historian Emily Bass about her book, To End a Plague, America's Fight to Defeat AIDS in Africa. She discusses the significance of PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief created under former President George W. Bush. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on Your Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs and counter Press Conference USA and issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Gina Dorfo in Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the World Meteorological Organization, the past 8 years have been the warmest on record, said President Joe Biden at the 2022 United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP27, in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. Over the past 2 years, the United States has delivered unprecedented progress at home. I can stand here as President of the United States of America and say with confidence, the United States of America will meet our emissions targets by 2030. However, the climate crisis is hitting hardest those countries and communities that have the fewest resources to respond and to recover. In most cases, they are also the countries that have contributed the least to the problem. That's why President Biden committed to providing $11 billion annually to support climate finance, including $3 billion for adaptation. The fund, called the President's Emergency Plan for Adaptation and Resilience, or PREPARE, will help more than half a billion people in developing countries respond to climate change.
As a down payment, we're announcing more than $150 million in initiatives that specifically support PREPARE's adaptation efforts throughout Africa, including Adaptation in Africa, effort that Egypt and the United States launched together in June.
Among other programs, the United States supports the Global Shield, a G7 initiative meant to protect vulnerable countries from climate-related losses and respond to climate-related damages. Another G7 program, Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment, intends to meet critical infrastructure needs in low- and middle-income countries with an eye toward climate. A partnership between U.S. firms and the government of Angola that has invested $2 billion in new solar projects in Angola is already underway. Then there is the Global Methane Pledge, meant to mitigate methane emissions, which was initiated last year by President Biden and European Commission President von der Leyen.
More than 130 countries have signed on to covering more than half of the global methane emissions. Methane is 80 times more potent than carbon, and it accounts for nearly half of the net warming we're experiencing now. So cutting methane by at least 30% by 2030 can be our best chance to keep within reach of 1.5 degrees Celsius target.
Everyone has to keep accelerating our efforts throughout this decisive decade, said President Biden. The challenges we face are great, but our capacity is greater than the challenges. We must never doubt that.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.